Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP, and AEP, and we are on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen each and every week at wdiy.org. Podcasts of prior shows are available there as well under local programming. You just look for Your Financial Choices and scroll through the podcasts that are available there. Today is November 15th, 2017. The markets were down a little bit today. The Dow closing at 23,271, the NASDAQ at 6706, and the S&P at 2564. So what is our topic tonight? Disaster planning. It seems like there's been so many things happening in the world, in our country, everywhere, where whether it's weather-related or some traumatic event, disaster planning, but disaster planning comes in many forms. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that we can do to be better prepared for any number of events that kind of come upon us. And we're going to talk about those strategies to use, some resources to use as we go through the show. We are live tonight. If you have questions, you're welcome to call in. We take questions live on air, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Lori C., who's answering calls, and she'll jot the question down and bring it into the studio. If you are going to talk live on air, just mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So a couple of weeks ago, I wrote an article for the Morning Call on disaster planning, and it was prompted just by, at the time, I think the fires in California and how tragic that is. And we'd hear stories about people literally only having time to grab their keys and jump in their car. I remember watching a story on YouTube where the gentleman said his dog was barking, woke him up, he looked out the window, saw a fire like across the street, grabbed the dog, jumped in his truck and took off. And that's what he ended up having after the fire ripped through the neighborhood was his dog and his car. And he was very thankful to have that. So sometimes there's disasters that come upon us very quickly and we can't necessarily plan for them. Sometimes we'll have warnings. You hear people talk about the weather alerts, you know, hurricanes coming, this is the direction, batten down the hatches, you know, put the boards on the windows, evacuate, get out of the area. And of course, we always hear those stories where people thought they were going to be okay and they didn't take the warning and they didn't move out. So what kinds of things can we do in those situations? But there's other things that might happen to us that may not be deemed disasters as far as that kind of verbiage, the word we use. It might be emergency or a medical event, an accident. You hear about people in car accidents or you know, falling down and breaking their hip and then ending up in a hospital in rehab for months and months. We might not call that disaster planning. We might call that emergency planning, or a lot of times there's been no planning around events like that. So it's not just those kind of weather disasters that we want to talk about planning for. It's also about personal events that may occur that we want to make sure you're, you know, being on top of things. Another type of event that I might call for people that are affected by it, as far as a disaster, might be something that we experienced a couple months ago, which was the Equifax breach. Many people might not even know if they're impacted by that yet. If our personal information was, you know, taken, we might not have had anything happen yet, but we might still yet see some ramifications from that. So, for example, quite often when you hear about personal information being compromised, we might think, oh, they're going to steal our credit, maybe, you know, access our bank accounts. But an additional threat might be that they access our personal information such that they go and file a tax return for us, not to our benefit, but to their own, where they get the information such as a social security number, date of birth, and they file a return with the IRS requesting some outrageous refund that we ourselves may never have, you know, been eligible for. They file the tax return maybe February 1st, and then when we go to file our tax return on March 15th or March 31st or April 5th, we find out we can't file our tax return. Usually nowadays we're filing electronically, and we go to file our tax return and the IRS rejects it because a tax return has already been filed with our number. And then that opens that can of worms of, oh no, what does this mean? Personal identity theft, and then we're having to contact the IRS and let them know, hey, I didn't file a tax return. Now, the IRS has taken steps to mitigate the refunds going out and being more careful, and sometimes they send a letter to the taxpayer saying, recently, a tax return was filed with your information. If this did not apply to you, please contact, you know, the IRS. So they're doing things to mitigate. But at the time when that's happening to you, it'll look like, you know, oh my gosh, my identity was taken or it's been compromised. That feels like a disaster, right? So what I want to try to cover tonight is talking a little bit about some of these, I wish I had the word. I can't seem to have the natural disasters like weather related. Then there's man-made disasters, things like the Equifax breach. And then, of course, there is just personal, what I'll call personal disasters that happen to us, whether it's been an accident or some, you know, medical event that puts us into a state of panic of what are we going to do now, because we don't have the typical comforts that we're used to having, you know, whether it's telephones or family members who we rely on, income coming in, that type of thing. So when we come back from this first break, I'm going to talk a little bit about risk management around disasters. What can you do for disaster planning? Risk management being insurance. And then some of the resources that we have available through some of the government websites, ready.gov and FEMA, they have information. Many of us may not even be aware of that. And also then, of course, having your estate planning documents, power of attorney, in particular, ready and available, and making sure that the people in your life are connected and know how to reach out to each other and have that information available. There's resources available to make sure that we have that all covered as well. Folks, if you have questions tonight, the phone number is 610-758-8255. 8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and you're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. And we are talking about disaster planning. I think what I'd like to do first is talk a little bit about the Equifax breach, just because that still seems to be coming up as a question quite often as to what should people be doing. So I printed off some information on that, and we had NPR actually did a segment on that on All Things Considered back in September 14th. Yuki Naguchi did that. And at the I went on the website and found this, and then there was some information at the bottom that was put out, it looked like, by someone named Emily Sullivan, and it said what you can do to protect your credit data and the steps to take care of that. So find out if your information may have been exposed. You can do this by entering your last name and the last six digits of your Social Security number at Equifax's website. And I know that Equifax actually had set up a special website in particular for this breach, and it was EquifaxSecurity2017.com, EquifaxSecurity2017.com. And you go on their site, it'll tell you if you may have been compromised. And I know that there was also some conversation around whether or not it was actually accurate. I read something that said people were putting in just, you know, kind of generic information, and it was saying, yes, you were exposed, and it wasn't even legitimate information. But regardless, it's supposed to be there to let you know. And then you can enroll for a free year of credit monitoring. So this article continues to say, whether or not your information was exposed, U.S. Equifax consumers are eligible for a year of free credit monitoring and other services, and the site will give you a date when you can come back to enroll. And I believe that enrollment was extended to January 31st, 2018. So if you had not enrolled in it, but you were still thinking about it or had some concerns, or your concerns have heightened over the last couple months, that you have until January 31st to sign up for that. You can contact the nationwide credit reporting companies and review your free credit reports from each of them. You are entitled to a free credit report every 12 months from each of the three major consumer reporting companies, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. And that always, you know, makes me kind of like roll my eyes, because Equifax is where the data breach was, and they're going to help you do the major consumer reporting. Anyway, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. And you can request a copy from annualcreditreport.com, annualcreditreport.com. And another step, be sure to monitor your accounts for any unusual activity. This is a given, folks. Everyone should be doing this anyway, despite whether you think your information was compromised or not. Accounts on your credit reports that you didn't open, incorrect personal information on your credit reports, and credit inquiries from companies you've never contacted are all potential signs of fraud or identity theft. You can consider placing a credit freeze. Placing a credit freeze on your reports makes it more difficult for a thief to open a new account in your name. Remember that a credit freeze cannot prevent a thief from making changes to your existing accounts. So Here's where I also kind of get perplexed by this whole thing. Isn't the cat already out of the bag, so to speak? So folks who have already, you know, retrieved that information, if they were planning on using it, they already have it. The credit freeze cannot prevent a thief from making changes to your existing accounts. You could also consider setting a fraud alert. This requires creditors to verify your identity before issuing a credit card, opening a new account, or increasing a credit limit on an existing account. A fraud alert will not prevent a lender from opening credit in your name the same way a freeze does, but it does require lenders to take additional steps to verify your identity theft, or your identity first. So we talked about credit reports, placing a freeze, monitoring your existing credit card and bank accounts closely for charges you don't recognize, and lastly, file your taxes early. Now, filing your taxes early is getting harder and harder, as anyone who gets 1099s know, that so many of the brokerage statements, the mutual fund companies have received extension upon extension for reporting dividends on their funds and capital gain distributions, that there are times when you're still getting 1099s into March, sometimes even corrected 1099s into March. So filing early isn't always an option for many people. Yes, W-2s are supposed to be mailed by January 31st. 1099 interest statements are supposed to be mailed by January 31st or 1099 miscellaneous, but it's those consolidated brokerage statements that might have your sales and your dividends that are really getting delayed quite a bit. The logic behind that, I believe, was the mutual fund companies need time at the end of the year to calculate the capital gain distributions versus dividends on those funds that you have. And if they issued the 1099 too early and they didn't have it all calculated properly, they were having to send corrected 1099s anyway. And then people were getting frustrated and upset for receiving corrected 1099s after they had already filed their tax return, that these fund companies requested extensions to file the 1099s such that they could do these calculations and therefore hopefully give you the proper correct information on the originally filed 1099 consolidated or 1099 dividend statement. So filing taxes early isn't always an option for everybody, but for the folks who have W-2s, simple tax returns, you might want to try to do that a little early. So that's kind of some information on the Equifax breach. Again, some people may be more inclined to take those steps and others not. But again, that website, if you do want to file or check on whether or not your information may have been compromised, it's EquifaxSecurity2017.com, and then you can enroll for the free credit monitoring until January 31st, 2018. Some employers might actually also provide that as an extra service. I believe my company actually provides it for us. So you might have an employer who has that as an employee benefit, free credit monitoring or protection, identity theft protection. There is also a website. If you think you were compromised or have identity theft, you can go to identitytheft.gov. That's G-O-V for government, identitytheft.gov. And they have a tool you can use that says get started, and you tell them what happened. They ask you some questions about your situation. You tell them as much as you can, and then they give you a to-do list. You get a recovery plan. They use the information from the questions you answered. It says we'll use that info to create a personal recovery plan, and then you put your plan into action. You create an account. They walk you through, because there is a lot of information and steps you have to take if you do think you had identity theft. I know I had a client years ago. His wife died. Her information was compromised, probably from an obituary, and we had to call the, I think we called the FBI, we called, we filed something with the IRS, we called the police. So there was a lot of steps we took. So it all depends on your situation. But identitytheft.gov will walk you through the steps needed. Folks, we're at our second break. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY. Podcasts of prior shows are also available at WDIY.org. You just go under local programming, look for Your Financial Choices, and podcasts from prior shows are there. What are we talking about tonight? Disaster planning. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air. Or if you're not comfortable talking live on air or just want to give your question to Lori C., just call in and she'll write the question down. Again, 610-758-8810. If it's off air, I'll just do my best to answer the question. If it's live, happy to talk with you. 610-758-8810. So disaster planning. We just kind of went through what might happen if you're information is compromised, your personal information is compromised, your identity, personal identity theft, identitytheft.gov. How many people knew about that? Maybe not. So that is good information to know, and they will walk you through what needs to be done. The Equifax breach, there's a website for that, equifax2017.com. Let's talk for a moment about risk management. When we're not sure if a disaster may come upon us, that's what risk management is managing the risk of something that might happen, and we typically use insurance. When we all buy insurance, we're, as a group, a country, you know, all the homeowners are buying insurance, all the car owners are buying insurance, people who worry about, you know, dying young by life insurance. When we're buying in a group kind of way, we're all sharing the cost of kind of covering those risks that might not, that may not befall all of us. But if they were to hit one of us, it could be quite devastating. So insurance is a cheaper way to kind of cover for those risks that we don't know if we're going to be the ones who are hit by it or not. So I always go back to a story. I had a client who, a tax client, who lost his home in a sinkhole, and he did not have sinkhole coverage. And when he went to the insurance company, this had happened right after one of our tropical storms. And there had been a lot of water. And of course, his logical explanation was, you know, this water kind of washed out the foundation or whatever it is under the house. And, you know, the house started falling in, sinkhole. And the insurance company disagreed, said, no, that wasn't it. And you didn't have sinkhole coverage, so we're not going to cover it. So you can imagine, you think you have homeowners insurance, you think all of the events that might happen around your home might be covered, and unless you're really paying attention and a kind of aware even of the geographical location of your home and what else is around there, you really need to have these conversations with your insurance agent. But even your insurance agent may not know the lay of the land where you have purchased a home. This gentleman who had the sinkhole, he found out that so many years ago, X number of years ago, there actually had been a sinkhole in this area. And he did not even know that. So I don't know how one finds that out. If you just have to know kind of the area, maybe you need to have a land study or review those land studies or do a little research before you buy a home to see what might be in your area. But if you think you are living in an area where there might be sinkholes, Allentown, Bethlehem, you want to make sure that you have sinkhole coverage. So that's a disaster you can plan for ahead of time. You can insure against certain disasters, sinkholes, flood. If you might be in a floodplain. I don't know all the lingo here, but you want to have flood insurance. If you have, you know, teens driving cars, you want to make sure you have good auto insurance and coverage. So you want to review your situation and know what kind of coverage you might need. Auto, homeowners, you want to make sure if you have prized possessions in the home, jewelry, musical instruments, that you have riders on your policy, have maybe those personal possessions appraised and have that information for your insurance agent so you know how much to cover for that. And in case there's a fire again or a flood or something like that in your home, you want even those other prized possessions covered. You might want to look at umbrella insurance. Umbrella insurance is kind of that umbrella over your auto and homeowners. If something's not covered and you're sued, do you have enough umbrella insurance to protect your assets that you might have? Some risk management and insurance that I would say is most neglected would be insuring against disability. So often we do think of those tangible things like our home and our auto, personal property, motorcycles, whatever it might be. Life insurance, I think people tend to also think about. When we're young, we can buy term insurance. We're worried about our families, our children. So it's kind of feels like a necessity. But when we're young, we also think we're resilient and, you know, nothing's going to happen to us. Things do happen to young people too, folks. And disability insurance, depending on your age and your occupation, may be fairly affordable when you're younger. And so many of us think we have that disability insurance through work. When you are interviewing for a job, you want to understand what the benefits might be. So let's say you get a job offer. You say, oh, thank you very much. I'm really excited. Is there a chance that I could look at the benefits that come along with the job? Because I just want to make sure that as part of my compensation package, I understand what indeed is going to be provided and what is not, what is going to be my responsibility. Some employers will provide long-term disability, but they may not provide short-term disability. So that might be something you want to look into purchasing or investing in. Short-term disability or long-term disability. If you have no assets, maybe you're just out of school and you just started this job, you may not have enough funds for that short-term period because long-term disability might not kick in for several months. And if your company is not providing short-term disability, you're going to need to pad for that. Or maybe they provide short-term and not long-term. Professionals especially have to watch out for disability because you might have a profession like a doctor, a surgeon. You might want disability that will cover your craft, your expertise, your profession, because you may not be disabled that you couldn't work at a grocery store, but you might be disabled that you can't do surgery. So you may have to inquire, look to buy your own disability. If you're buying disability and you pay for it with after-tax dollars, when you receive the disability payments, they're not going to be income taxable. If you're paying for disability through your employer and you do it on a pre-tax basis, then that disability will be income taxable to you when you receive it. So you also not only want to look for disability coverage, you also want to look for how you are paying for it. Long-term care, obviously, is another area you want to look for coverage if that is applicable to you. And I think that's a very personal decision. And there's so many different ways to kind of cover some long-term care costs that you might have today that it's the options have opened the door for people to use methods that you might not have otherwise considered in the past. Some people don't want to pay for long-term care. Well, there's other options for you now. So check that out. Folks, we are at the halfway point. Disaster planning is what we're talking about. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. Fast look at Lehigh Valley weather. Tonight, showers after 1 a.m. with a low around 40. It is currently 48 degrees. The time is 6:30. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here, WDIY Allentown.
Thank you, Joe. Welcome back, folks. This is your host, Lori Siebert. And we are talking about disaster planning tonight. So we started the show kind of giving an overview of any number of events that might cause us to be in a bit of a panic as something is happening around us. We've talked about the data breach with Equifax. We've talked a little bit about insurance, making sure you have your property and casualty all up to date and in order and proper coverage, and maybe using umbrella insurance, using riders, making sure you have, you know, extra insurance for certain things that may happen in your area, like flood or sinkhole. Maybe you have a septic tank. There's certain insurance you want to make sure you have covered, umbrella to cover all those other little accidents or potential lawsuits that may occur in the event someone, you know, falls down in your driveway or a tree falls on them or something like that. Life insurance, we want you to review your life insurance. A lot of times, you know, people think you have this life insurance and you definitely want to make sure that you're protecting in the event of, you know, a premature death or something. If your family is relying on your income for their living expenses, or you have children and their potential education. And quite often people forget that they still have life insurance and maybe they're beyond those needs that they originally had. You're in your retirement years, you've already paid for the kids' college education, you paid for the mortgage, and you're still carrying this life insurance. So yes, we also want to review when we have insurance that we don't need any longer. So pay attention to that. As far as other kind of disaster planning, when I was first thinking of this, it was really more around those fires in California when you have a split second to make a decision. In fact, my sister-in-law was at her mother's house and they got a call at midnight. This was in California in the Napa Valley. And her sister called her at midnight and said, "What are you guys doing?" And Susie said, "What do you mean? What are we doing? We're going to sleep." And she said, "Haven't you heard, you know, the fire's, you know, coming in your area?" And boy, they immediately got out. And sure enough, like, you know, after the aftermath, it was, I think, maybe even a couple weeks before they could go back. Her mother's home ended up being, my sister-in-law's mother's home was fine, but the neighbor's house was gone. So they were lucky and fortunate to get out. If they had stayed, might something have happened? Who knows? But you don't want to be kind of looking back in the mirror and saying, gosh, if I would have, could have, should have. So you have to pay attention to emergency alerts and warnings. So when we think about disaster planning, the government has any number of websites. Every regular show listener knows that I love government websites for some of this information that's out there, and it's free. They have a website called ready.gov and /make-a-plan. Make a plan at ready.gov. www.makeaplan.gov. And they have a checklist. And the Make a Plan says your family may not be together if a disaster strikes, so it's important to know which types of disasters could affect your area. But one of the, they have steps. And step one says put together a plan by discussing these four questions with your family, friends, or household to start your emergency plan. And the first one was, how will I receive emergency alerts and warnings? And they had a link that I clicked to, and we have emergency alerts. I don't know how many of you already might get these emergency alerts on your phones. I receive Amber alerts on my phone. I'm trying to think if in our area in Pennsylvania, we're pretty lucky that we don't have, you know, hurricanes and earthquakes and fires, at least, you know, to the degree that the rest of the country has been seeing. I know that in the past we have had some minor little earthquake, and we have had some after effect of hurricanes. Occasionally we have tornadoes. I myself, you know, was in kind of a tornado in Michigan back when I was in college, and I thought, what's the big deal? What's everybody running around being so upset about? And then when I ended up driving out, you know, I was in a cab actually trying to get to work because I was all about work back then. And the disaster and devastation we saw as we were driving to work, it was so upsetting. And the taxi cab driver said, I'm going home after this. It was really bad. Back then, we didn't have maybe the systems we do now that are available just by using our phone, that we can get alerts on our phone. And they said they try to have a sound and a signal that is going to be very different, that you know it means something, that there's an emergency. So it'll say there is a tornado in your area. And you can get more information on that by linking to wireless emergency alerts on that website, ready.gov, Make a Plan. So you can find out more about getting those emergency alerts. Second thing is, what is my shelter plan? And all of these items on the checklist have links to them that you can go to get more information. What is my evacuation? What is my family household communication plan? And they even have information available for the family, but also for children. And I thought that was quite nice to kind of make kids at least feel empowered and ready in case something happens. I always would rather be ahead of something than behind something. There's so much more stress and anxiety when we're surprised with something than if we've already thought it through. In fact, that was something I used to do with my kids when they were in high school. I'd say, well, if you're in this situation at school, at the lunch table, someone offers you drugs, here's something you can say. If a boy does this, here's something you can say. I'd like to prepare them so that when all of a sudden they found themselves in the situation, they knew what the action would be. It lowered the level of anxiety. So one of the links, the before an evacuation, they talk about learning what types of disasters are likely in your community and the local emergency evacuation. Where would you go? Do you have neighbors? Are there hotels? Develop a family household communication plan, and then what to do after the evacuation, if such a thing exists. But I think that this is a good checklist to go through. There was, it's called America's Prepare-a-thon, Ready. Be smart, take part, create your family emergency communication plan. So with that, they said, creating your family emergency communication plan starts with one simple question. What if? What if something happens and I'm not with my family? Will I be able to reach them? How will I know they are safe? How can I let them know I'm okay? One of the things that happened, I think, in Puerto Rico with the hurricane is all the cell towers were down, and then, you know, there was no communication, and that made it very difficult. But I think that if we have plans, at least our family members would know, well, we had talked about this. If there was an emergency, this is what they were going to do. I know they had a plan. Even if they can't communicate with me, I know they had a plan, and they'll, you know, be in contact as soon as possible. So number one, they say create a paper copy of the contact information for your family and other important people or offices such as medical facilities, doctors, schools, or service providers. Share. Make sure everyone carries a copy in his or her backpack, purse, or wallet. And if you complete your family emergency communication plan online, you can print it into a wallet-sized card. You should also post a copy of it in a central location in your home, such as your refrigerator or family bulletin board. And then, of course, practice. Have regular household meetings to review and practice your plan. Sorry, that just takes me back to when I was a little kid with my little brother. We'd always stay up really late after we were sent to bed at 8:30, which we thought was ridiculous because we're all night people. My parents would send us to bed at 8:30. We used to call it a fire drill, and we would practice getting ready in case my dad came upstairs and we knew we'd get in trouble for being awake. So we'd say fire drill, and we'd practice being ready. That's what we're talking about, being ready. In fact, this hit me even when I was getting ready for the show. I thought, if something happened to my husband and I, are our kids going to know where all the most important papers are? I think they know. They know the place to go because they have their own important papers in there. But I thought, in the moment of emergency, do they really think as clearly as we expect? And maybe by practicing and talking about it more often, it will become second nature instead of kind of an afterthought. So you want to make sure you have that information available. And for people with young children still in school, do you have the phone numbers for the school? Child care providers or caregivers, workplace, do the kids have the phone numbers for work if something happens? Now, I know at school, you're always filling out that emergency information every single year. Have you done that also with the care providers? What if it's a babysitter that's at the house and something happens? Do they really have your cell phone number? You want to make sure all that information is there. Back when I had kids that were little, I think I was much more diligent about having that information. And as we get older, we kind of forget about having that available. And especially nowadays with cell phones, so many of us have our cell phone numbers all plugged in, all of our contact information plugged into our cell phones, that if all of a sudden we no longer have access to that cell phone, are we going to remember any of those phone numbers that we had plugged in? Some of the original cell phone numbers that my family had, I still remember those, but my son who got his cell phone last, I may not remember that number. Or a lot of people have let go of their landlines and have just cell phones. Do they have an alternative? Is there someone else that might have a landline, who maybe a neighbor? And in fact, I had someone call me one day, and they said, "This is going to sound funny, but we're your neighbor's employer. And she has not shown up for work for a few days, and her husband is in a foreign country, and we don't know what's going on, and we know this sounds strange." They looked us up online, like did like an aerial view of her home and found the neighbor and somehow found our address, looked up our phone number and called and said, "Could you please go check on her?" Well, I being from Michigan and helping people, certainly, I ran over to the neighbor's house. Maybe not have been such a good idea, but I did because it sounded so sincere and the gentleman, knew certain information. So I run next door and lo and behold, someone answered the door and it was actually the husband. And he tells me, "Oh my gosh, I just returned from India. My wife is in the hospital. There was an accident." And I said, "Well, her employer is very worried about her and has called." And he was quite impressed that they took those extra steps. But, what would you do? Here we had an employer who had no other contact information but to go on the internet and do a satellite search of the woman's neighborhood to find a neighbor who they could find a landline number that we had. So you want to make sure if if you only know cell phones and you only have those numbers in your phone, do you have them written down somewhere else? Because you might not have your cell phone, but you might have access to someone else's cell phone or a landline that then you could contact your family members. Car accidents. My niece flipped her car in Michigan a few years ago now. And I think in the flipping of the car, she ended up being okay, but in the flipping of the car, lost the cell phone. What do you do? So you have to know phone numbers because you might not have it available. Get that information written down, and you can get a plan on that website that I mentioned. And I'll mention that again when I get back from the break. We're last quarter of the hour. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
In 2017, WDIY is celebrating 22 years on the air. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support. We couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit wdiy.org or call 610-694-8100. WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we're talking about disaster planning tonight. Just a few more comments about family communications, and again, that website for the Family Emergency Communication Plan. You can fill out the information on ready.gov/make-a-plan. Make a plan with dashes in between. So ready.gov, make a plan. And then you can print it out a wallet-sized card. The other important tips, especially again with communications and cell phones, is that they have offered there from the Federal Communications Commission is text is best when using a mobile phone. Making phone calls, keep it brief in emergencies. Conserve your mobile phone battery by reducing the brightness of your screen, placing your phone in airplane mode, and closing apps you do not need. Limit watching videos and playing video games to help reduce network congestion. Hey, it's always a good idea these days too, folks. Radio is not out. Yes, we are still here. And it doesn't hurt to have a radio handy, a battery-operated radio, in fact, because you can still get emergency information and updates from a battery-operated radio if everything else fails. Keep charged batteries, a car phone charger, and a solar charger available for backup power for your mobile phone. And if you charge your phone in your car, be sure the car is in a well-ventilated area, not in a closed garage, to avoid life-threatening carbon monoxide poisoning, because, you know, a lot of times you have to have your car running to charge it. So be careful with that. All right, 10 ways to participate. Access alerts and warnings, test communication plans, assemble or update supplies, drill or practice emergency response, participate in a class, training, or discussion, plan with neighbors, conduct an exercise, make property safer, document and insure property, and safeguard documents. So let's talk about documents. This is when maybe a personal disaster strikes, an accident, emergency, a premature death, something like that. You want to make sure that you have your documents all in order in case someone has to act on your behalf. And that would be healthcare power of attorney or durable power of attorney, living will, health directives, that kind of thing. People have to know what you want and what needs to be done. So the National Institute on Aging has a little brochure on getting your affairs in order, and that is available at nih.gov. So that's the National Institute on Aging through is NIH National Institute of Health. So NIA.nih.gov/health, and then getting your fares in order. And they have two stories. And one of the, this happens all the time, folks. Ben's story, he was married for 47 years. He's always managed the family's money. But since his stroke, Ben is not able to walk or talk. His wife, Shirley, feels overwhelmed. Of course, she's worried about Ben's health. But on top of that, she has no idea what bills should be paid or when they are due. You know, so many people do online banking now. And in order to do online banking, you have to know the user ID and the password. And guess what else sometimes you have to know? The security word. So even if you have the user ID and the password, there will typically have been security questions that are set up that it's an extra level of authentication. And if you don't know the answers to the security questions, then even if you have the user ID and the password, sometimes that is not enough, especially if you're logging in from a location where the, maybe in this case, the husband always logs on. So maybe the husband does all of his banking on his work laptop that they provide, and maybe the work doesn't care that they do personal things at home, you know, that they have to carry it back and forth. So Ben, in my story, does all of his stuff on the laptop, and then something happens to Ben, and Shirley says, oh, well, at least I know his the website for the banking, and I know his user ID and password. So she logs on, and she thinks she's all set, and all of a sudden they say, you know, who's your favorite football team? Maybe she knows, maybe she doesn't. Maybe it was, where was your, you know, what was your favorite pet as a child? What is your favorite image? What is your favorite flower? So all of a sudden, there may be security questions that someone has to know in order to log on. And the online banking might be one of those areas. So sometimes you have a joint account and one person has the online access and the other person never has to do it. This is that kind of situation I'm talking about. So while in my story, Ben might have done all the online banking, Shirley never did. Maybe Shirley, you know, can't, you know, log on for whatever reason. If she has joint ownership, at least she could still maybe go in and get money out of the account if she needed, or she could go into the bank and say, hey, husband's incapacitated. Can you at least show me the transactions for the last couple months? And then maybe Shirley then would have an idea of what kind of online bills were being paid. That could be an option. What if it's not the spouse? What if you're not joint? Who's going to go in and do that for you? The only way you're going to be able to do that is, number one, if you've recorded that information somewhere and then have told someone where it is, so that trusted person can go in and help you if you are incapacitated. But you could also have power of attorney information already set up ahead of time. So the other story that NIH and National Institute of Aging had in this little getting your affairs in order was Louise's story. And across town, 80-year-old Louise lives alone. One night she fell in the kitchen and broke her hip. This happens, folks. It happens. She spent a week in the hospital and 2 months in a rehab nursing home. Even though her son lives across the country, he was able to pay her bills and handle her Medicare questions right away. That's because several years ago, Louise and her son made a plan about what he should do in case Louise had a medical emergency. And in fact, it looks like, according to this article, that you can give Medicare permission to talk with, you know, the son and it, about health and insurance claims and doctors. So you need to have those healthcare powers of attorney, a durable power of attorney, probably available, maybe even give them to the doctor's office ahead of time. I know we in financial services, when we have family members say, you know, I'm not feeling as comfortable, I'm a little nervous about things, maybe you're not as sharp as you used to be, could you talk to my son? We say, of course, do you have a power of attorney? Does he have a power of attorney? Get that on file, let us have a copy of it so that we can have those discussions when needed with permission. So you want to make sure that you have that paperwork ready, proactive. Do it ahead of time. So the article goes on to say what exactly is an important paper and that it may be different for every family member. This is just a starting place. So personal records, your full legal name, social security number, legal residence, date and place of birth, name and address of spouse and children, location of important documents like birth certificates, death certificates, marriage certificates, sometimes military discharge papers are important, citizenship, adoption, employers and dates of employment. That might be important because if mom or dad are retired, you never know if they were employed. They might have been receiving a pension. There might be death benefits. There might be life insurance left with a former employer. Sometimes, even though you've separated from service, a former employer as part of the benefits may have still provided a life insurance policy, maybe $10,000 or something like that. We have heard these stories. That's why it's important to have some of this information. The education, military records, as I mentioned, religious contacts. Are they going to want a service? At what church? You know, maybe the church in Michigan or church in New York. Who knows? You want to find out what is important to your loved one in the event something should happen. And of course, names and phone numbers of close friends, relatives, doctors, lawyers, and financial advisors. Medications taken regularly. This is really important. I think so many people are private about financial matters. They also are sometimes very private about their medical information and history, including medications. I was just at a seminar with the Estate Planning Council, was it last Thursday? And we had a psychiatrist come in and talk about dementia and bipolar disorders and recognizing certain behaviors and so that family members could be aware when there's some amplified behavior that is not expected. Sometimes amplified behavior doesn't mean that someone has dementia. It might mean that they have a urinary tract infection. It might mean that they had a reaction to medicine. Well, if we don't know what medicine people are on, I'm not saying a financial advisor has to know, but just that if we're all aware of different behavior. And what the psychiatrist was stressing in particular was an amplified behavior, meaning this is just really out of the ordinary. Grammy has gotten really, really grumpy and she never used to be. It doesn't mean she has dementia. It could mean that there's some underlying physical problem. And one of the ones this psychiatrist had mentioned, not just UTI, but also cardiac issues. So heart issues can cause a change in behavior. So it could be a reaction to medicine. Doctors can prescribe, medicine that may not be for the particular condition. So you want to kind of be aware of someone's behavior. And then make sure that you have phone numbers if you need to let someone know. Maybe a neighbor's watching out for your mom or dad. Make sure that they, you know, let you know and it's all okay. Financial records, of course, sources of income and assets, Social Security, Medicare, insurance information, bank accounts, investment income, copies of the most recent tax return. Of course, wills, powers of attorney, liabilities are important as well. Credit card information, car titles and registration, credit card and debit card names and numbers, location of safe deposit box and key. So there's lots of information on that website as well. NIA.nih.gov/health/getting-your-affairs-in-order. So folks, that was kind of a high-level review of some disaster planning. We want to make sure that you have a plan with your family, that you've reviewed your insurance coverage, and that you have all of the documents in order that you're going to need in the event of anything happening. Remember, we talk each week on the show about being proactive and not reactive. Don't wait for a disaster to happen. It's really not fun trying to plan after the fact. Next week, we are going to have a pre-recorded show, And then we will be back. And that's because next week it's already Thanksgiving. I can't believe it. I don't believe it. But that's what apparently the calendar says. So pre-recorded show next week. And then on November 29th, we will return and we're going to do a show on managing debt. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. I want to thank Lori for being here tonight and listeners. We didn't have any calls tonight. Hopefully, we'll get lots of calls on November 29th, maybe some year-end tax planning. I have lots of opinions about the tax reform we're seeing, but we'll save that for another show. Joe, thanks for being here tonight as well. And remember, folks, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.